From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet. Here's what's happening. North Korea has executed five officials for their part in the failed second summit between President Trump and the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, according to a South Korean newspaper. Citing the newspaper, North Korea's special envoy, apparently to the U.S., and four other North Korean foreign ministry officials were executed because of the breakdown of the summit that was in Hanoi and Vietnam back several months ago. Can you believe that? President Donald Trump has announced tariffs on goods coming from Mexico in a bid to curb illegal immigration. In a tweet, Mr. Trump said that on June 10th, a 5% tariff would be imposed and would slowly rise until the illegal immigration problem is remedied. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's outlined several apparent crimes in his report, but did not offer a conclusion on obstruction because he said his boss was unlikely to permit prosecution. That's the Attorney General. Judge Andrew Napolitano, whose claims Thursday on special report on Fox TV, added that he sees evidence that President Trump allegedly broke the law. John Hogue is a prophecy expert. He comes on our program quite often, and I thought we'd tap into his mind to see if he can look into the president's future. John, what do you think with all this stuff?
I think there's a lot of noise, and there is a lot of a psychedelic version of 1996. when that time it was the Republicans that were in a hysterical desire to elect anybody but a second term to Bill Clinton. Mm-hmm. And even when he was elected, they tried to impeach him for something that was, adultery in the White House. And they did impeach him, but they did not get him out of office. And I'm seeing the opposition to Trump following the same mistake. And this may seem strange, especially because of all the hysteria that's on the mainstream media right now about it, partisan both ways, is that there's a lesson that I've warned people for years about Trump, is that you never win being negative.
That's
with
right.
Trump. He always turns your negativity on you because your negativity is disempowering, and he has a way of turning that on you. And if the Democratic candidates want to gang up and do an impeachment, which I've warned a number of times, it's literally handing him a second term.
And in terms of predictions, it's a little too early because I want to see who the Democrat field against President Trump, and then we're going to tap into you again and see if that streak continues of selecting who's going to be the next president. But as of right now, regardless of knowing the true candidates, let's say Joe Biden. Could Biden win?
No, he's he is a consummate loser as a primary elector person. The other thing, too, is that I've got to say that the mainstream news is not illuminating who is at the top. They're literally just choosing the people that have the most donors, not the people who actually want these people to be elected. There's even a situation that's generating where the people in the first big debate in September, if they don't have around 130,000 to 160,000 donors that they can prove, that this platoon of people that want to be in the debate will not be in it because they don't. It's not about that people want them. It's money.
Good point. John, we'll talk to you soon. Keep in touch. John Hogue, our prophecy expert. Multiple journalists have been detained in a Swiss airport after filming Bilderberg participants arriving on the very first day of the elite gathering. We've got more on the Bilderberg gathering at coasttocoastam.com. Journalist Dan Dix and his crew were attempting to interview the new arrivals before authorities held them in detention rooms in Geneva at the airport for 20 minutes, according to a video published on the Press for Truth YouTube channel. And again, a story on what's going on there at coasttocoastam.com. The Bilderbergs meet yearly for just about anything to control the planet. Target is warning customers not to use its Heyday charging cable to power up their Apple devices. The retailer, in conjunction with the Consumer Product Safety Commission, has recalled 90,000 of the cables after receiving reports of them smoking, sparking, or igniting fires when plugged in. Not good. Two consumers have burned their fingers already on the cables. Lauren Weinstein, our expert on such things, with us. Well, where did these things come from, Lauren? What do you think?
Well, you can certainly get burned with the kinds of prices Apple charges for their own hardware, but you don't want to get burned this way. These are apparently lightning connector cables. So they were about $15 cables from Target, standard USB-A connector on one side, Apple lightning connector on the other. So these aren't, we're not talking about the standard type of USB cables that have a mini or micro or type C connectors on both sides. Or type A on one side and one of those.
Were they made in China? Korea?
I don't know, but would you like to place a bet?
Yeah. It would be a good bet.
Yeah. So part of what drives this in this area is that Apple's prices for their own branded equipment and cables and accessories are premium prices. So that creates a very large third-party marketplace for compatible products, and quality is going to vary. The thing is, it's important to realize that, especially when it comes to cables and various other accessories too, price and quality do not necessarily go hand in hand. You'll frequently find inexpensive cables that work just as well as much more expensive ones, and expensive ones that work just like the cheap ones. Sometimes generic no-name brands are fine too. And this is, we're not talking just about USB cables and charging cables here. This goes across ordinary audio cables, HDMI video cables, all kinds of cables. It's an area where there's vast ranges of pricing that doesn't necessarily equate to quality. So this kind of puts the consumer between a rock and a hard place, because you don't want to overspend and possibly not get a superior product for your money, and you don't want to buy something that's cheap that doesn't work either. So really what I recommend is to do as much research as you feel you can on something like a cable or accessories. It's good to go on the net and see what people's experiences have been, but don't let price alone be the guide. Don't assume that just because it's more expensive, or for that matter, inexpensive, that it's necessarily bad or good, because those two issues are really decoupled an awful lot of the time.
Lauren, Tuesday, June 11th, you're going to be with us for a couple hours to talk about the dark web, 5G, AI intelligence, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think we'll be talking about virtual reality, too.
Which that's right.
An area now that's science fiction kind of come to life for consumers.
Great. We'll take calls, too. That'll be fun.
Yeah. So, Tuesday, June 11th is the rumor I've heard.
Super. 5G, I want to know all about that. The dark web, too. I'm hearing a lot about the dark web these days. Well, FedEx, to keep competitive, is going to start delivering ground packages 7 days a week now. A lot of people are ordering online. They want to get their packages. UPS delivers on Saturday. FedEx says they're going to start doing it, too. It's going to start in January of 2020. Okay, imagine this. It's kind of weird to think about it. But a Florida man lifted his toilet seat in his bathroom, and a 4-foot python jumped out of the toilet and bit him on the arm, according to a police report. Guy was 52 years old. He had no idea how the snake got in his toilet. Did it come up through the pipes? Who knows? He's lucky it just bit him on the arm. My gosh. Up next, let's talk about the Mound Builders. Mathematical mysteries of the Mound Builders. L.A. Marzulli joins me next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We've got an amazing program for you tonight, beginning with L.A. Marzulli joining us, author, lecturer, filmmaker. He has penned many, many, many books, including the Nephilim Trilogy, received an honorary doctorate for the series from the Pacific International University. He's lectured on the subject of UFOs, the Nephilim, prophetic texts as well. He's got several DVDs out, including On the Trail of the Nephilim, Mathematical Mysteries of the Mound Builders. L.A., welcome back, my friend.
Hey, great to be here, George. I hear we're in the in some film together. I just Tom Danheiser was telling me about that.
Yes, as I did my part today, and I guess have you done yours yet?
I did mine about eight, nine months ago. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. When they give us more information, I'll let you know.
Thank you.
Now, what's going on with your personal life? I know your house was burned down in the L.A. fires a couple months ago. Have you regrouped?
Well, we have. We actually fled to Oklahoma. We have good friends here, Gary Stearman, Bob Ulrich. And it's, you know, now we're dealing with the tornadoes, which has been extremely interesting.
Really? You can't get away from
it. We're safe. Yeah, we're safe. Everything's good. We're back up and running. We have a beautiful home. I just want to thank the people that contributed on our GoFundMe page. That really helped us out. And, you know, we're up and running and filming and producing films and doing what we do. So we're... Things are good. The property finally got scraped about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and that's almost 6 months now since the fire.
Are you going to go back?
We actually bought a used RV, a fifth wheeler, for $4,000, and we're going to park it on the property and use it just so we can figure out, you know, can we rebuild? How much do we have to rebuild? We're just looking at all our options. But yeah, we were actually there a couple of weeks ago. Just to survey what was left of it.
Well, you let us know if there's anything more you need from us. We'd be glad to help you.
Thank you so much.
Now, let's talk a little bit about what's going on DVD-wise with you these days. What are some of the latest works?
Well, this is a new series, On the Trail of a Nephilim. I've written, it's actually a 700-page book, which we're actually reproducing. We'll have that probably in July. We're taking On the Trail 1 and 2, plus the DNA evidence, and compiling it all in one big thick tome.
700 pages?
It's 700 pages. It's got over 350 full-color photos.
Are you rewriting the Bible?
Some people call it the definitive work. I don't think it's that. But it's got tons and tons of information, not only from here, but, of course, a lot of stuff down in Peru and our DNA evidence with the elongated skulls. So from that came the mysterious mound builders, the first offering. The second offering, which we'll talk about tonight, is Mathematical Mysteries of the Mound Builders. And the third one is Secrets of the Supernatural Voices from the Other Side. There was all sorts of paranormal stuff, which we just stumbled into, which is on the film in episode 3. So this whole thing is episodic. We spent 4 or 5 days up at America Stonehenge. We have filmed all over Europe, Malta, Gozo, Israel, some of the other islands, Sardinia, for instance, Palermo, I mean, just Sicily, all sorts of places. And we're headed over to parts unknown here towards the end of July, once again on a 3-week filming safari, all sorts of different sites. And what we're trying to do with all this is, look, and Graham Hancock just came out with a book, America Before, and I'm sort of plowing through that. And while we may disagree on some points, we all agree, Graham Hancock, myself, others who are doing this, I think your guest in the second part of the show, Dr. Little, something is going on here that in some ways may have been deliberately obfuscated by the powers that be. And that's what we delve into in Mathematical Mysteries of the Mound Builders, because what we discovered there were highly advanced mathematics, geometry, trigonometry, and even when these mounds were built 2,000 years ago, Europeans didn't have this knowledge. They didn't discover trigonometry until about 2,000 years ago. So if First Nation people are over here and they have the ability to do trigonometry, where's the evidence of that? And we don't see it. And what we do have is the oral tradition, which is passed down from tribe to tribe to tribe. Surely something like that would have remained intact, or people would have said, hey, this, look at this. This is how this works. And it's just like Stonehenge. We'll be visiting that in a few weeks. Okay, we're not sure how the stones were moved. A lot of different theories there. Some people say we're moved in the winter on ice sledges, and on it goes.
Or they kind of walked them in place, which I find kind of weird.
Yeah, that's a weird deal. That's Easter Island.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually, I'm sure you've seen it, where they're walking these huge statues by rocking them back and forth.
They move.
It's really interesting.
Yeah.
And they move. Absolutely. But the bottom line is there's advanced astronomy here. I mean, and mathematics, which are employed in the astronomical alignments. And it begs the question, you know, how did they do that when they don't have advanced mathematics that we know of? So as a frank supernaturalist, all these films come from the worldview or the paradigm that there are supernatural forces which are at work here, which the Darwinists, because they don't believe in the supernatural, just immediately dismiss and won't talk about. So that's sort of the idea of the film.
Now, when we talk about mound builders, explain what a mound builder is, first of all, L.A. For a lot of people are trying to, you know, ascertain, just what's a mound? What are they talking about?
Well, from Ohio, which has 10,000 mounds, down to the Gulf of Mexico, there are literally thousands and thousands of mounds. And while Native Americans, First Nation people, did build some of them, and we're not disputing that, we understand that. But what we're trying to get into is the idea that, did they build all of them? And Chief Joseph Riverwind, who was the Tiano war chief, peace chief, actually, comes on the record in all three films. And what he has to say is extremely interesting because, obviously, being First Nation, some of this was handed down. And he talks about the giants, the Nephilim, that were there. And according to him, according to Chief Joseph, that First Nation people talk about warring with these giants. They talk about the giants being cannibalistic. They talk about them coming into these villages and picking up a brave, ripping the head off, and drinking the blood. So as we show in the first film, okay, there's 10,000 mounds in Ohio. Well, there's not that many people to build these mounds. When we went down to Louisiana, Poverty Point, 390,000 tons of earth, and we talked about this last time on the show, Mysterious Mound Builders, but, you know, not everybody probably heard that. So let's just delve into it real quickly.
Sure.
390,000 tons of earth, that's like approximately 150 miles of dump trucks end-to-end, completely filled with dirt.
And they didn't have bulldozers in those days.
No, they didn't have it. So what they're trying to tell us, modern-day archaeologists, that Native Americans used these hoes, primitive hoes made of flint, went out and did one basket full at a time. And so what we did is we hired a flint knapper, and we show all this in Mysterious Mound Builders, the first film. We hired a flint knapper. This guy made a replica of a hoe that would have been used 3,000 years ago, let's say. And we hired a fit laborer. This guy goes out into the field, and we show him digging the soil near Poverty Point, scooping it up with his hands, taking one bucket, and then moving that bucket, let's say, a couple hundred yards to where the site would have been, dumping the bucket, dumping it down with his feet. Well, when you calculate 390,000 tons of earth, that basically moves into 28 million single buckets of earth.
Which would have taken you about 50,000 years.
Well, it's absurd.
Yeah.
Something else is at stake here, in our opinion. And that's only one dynamic of this. When we start looking at the mound, how did they compact the soil? In other words, there are the Athena mounds. The Athena, and these names are just given by archaeologists. We have no idea what these people or these entities who were on these sites actually called themselves. So when we talk about Athena, these are the woodland people, the Athena, and then the Hopewell. The Hopewell come later, afterwards. And their mounds look different than the Athena mounds. And the Athena mounds are all over Ohio. And I've been to many of them, and they are different looking than, let's say, the Hopewell mound. But the Athena mound, and let's just pick one, when you go to Miamisburg, which is in Ohio, the sides are extremely steep. It's a very steep incline. And the soil is packed very, very tightly. Now, I don't know of anyone, and I'm sure somebody has already done it, but I have not been able to find a report from a soils engineer talking about the compaction of the soil, which is something that we want to do. We want to go to one of these sites, and we want to make sure that we're testing the soil in a place that has not been disturbed in thousands of years, and do a compaction test on this. Because the sides are really steep, and it begs the question, how the heck do you do that? I mean, this is already difficult as it is, but how are they compacting it? Are 10 guys lifting up huge logs and stamping it down like some sort of a, you know, antiquated steamroller type thing? We just don't know. We just don't know. And so it's, you know, look, I'm not trying to disparage what Native Americans did.
No. They probably did do the work, but they had some kind of help.
There's something else going on here for sure. And when we start drilling into the advanced mathematics and the solar alignments that are all through these sites, that's where, for me, it starts to go off the scale. And you kind of go, wait a minute, guys, something else is going on.
Hold on for a second, L.A. We'll talk more about this because the something else is very important. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're with L.A. Marzulli talking about his work on the trail of the Nephilim, Mathematical Mysteries of the Mound Builders, with a series of three programs, Lynn. Do we have to watch them in chronological order, or can you skip around?
Oh, you can definitely skip around. They're meant to be standalone, but obviously, if you start with one, episode one, by the time three is released and you get to three, you know, you've got the background, and that's the whole point. But, you know, you can, they're all standalone films, absolutely.
I'm familiar with the Cahokia Mounds, which is on the other side of the Mississippi in Illinois, across from St. Louis. 2,200 acres, 80 mounds. At one time, there was about 120 man-made earthen mounds. Here's the big question. No matter where the mounds may be, where are the mound builders?
Bingo.
All of
them.
They
vanish. They absolutely vanish into thin air. In fact, you know, we've got reports when the first white settlers pressed into Ohio and they came upon the Great Circle Mound and the Octagon Mound, which we really get into in episode two, because that's where the advanced mathematics are employed. I mean, it's bizarre when you really start drilling into what those sites, what's embedded in those sites. So the white settlers come across the First Nation people and they see these huge mounds. And they go, who built these? And according to, you know, my research, they said, we don't know they were here when we got here. And what I find interesting is, just like in Peru with Sacsayhuaman, Sacsayhuaman is the largest stone, 50, 80, 100 tons put together. And these are andesite stones quarried about 40 miles away, brought to the site, and they are polygonal in shape. And they are fitted together absolutely perfectly. And andesite is very hard. And thousands of years ago, the Inca only had copper chisels. You can't cut andesite with copper. So they didn't do it. Bottom line is, the Inca state on the record, we don't know who built it. It was here when we got here. We see this repeated. There's a pattern here, George. And I don't understand exactly what I'm looking at yet, which is why we're on the trail, which is why we're out in the field constantly and doing research, talking to people, trying to find out. But it's like the people just vanish. Anthropologists and archaeologists will insist that, and this is what they say, and I say this with all due respect, but they'll tell us that Native Americans, First Nation people, built all these mounds, but then they just simply forgot that they had done so, which in my way of thinking is incredibly insulting, because First Nation people have oral tradition, and they hold on to that tenaciously, and that's passed down from one generation to the next.
Exactly. Well, you know, and I would also say, L.A., you know, if there were several areas of mound builders that, you know, were gone, you'd say, well, you know, okay, something happened, a plague, some calamity, crops failed, they left. Right. But not all of them. They're all gone.
It's really a mystery, and that's why we're on the trail. I mean, it really is a mystery. And then you start throwing in some of the Paleo-Hebrew or the Paleo-Phoenician that we've discovered. I'll just tip my hand to a later episode at American Stonehenge, and this was just a mind-blower. And they've got provenance for this. It's one thing to find an artifact, or someone comes up with an artifact. Well, where did you find this? Well, I don't know. I got it from some guy who said he found it in a cave somewhere, okay? That's not provenance. But when you have an artifact and you know exactly where it came from, and you have eyewitnesses who have signed affidavits stating it came from this over here, that's what we're looking for. And at America Stonehenge, there is such an artifact. And it's a stone with writing on it that when they uncovered this in one of the chambers at America Stonehenge in New Hampshire, no one knew what it was. No one knew what it was. They knew it looked like some kind of writing, but no one could decipher it. 10 years later, a professor, a linguist, looks at this thing and goes, that looks like Phoenician. And he starts doing some research and translates it. And this is where it goes off the rails for me. It says Tubal of the Canaanites. And that comes from the Middle East.
That sure
and
does.
That rewrites history as we know it.
How many mounds are there in North America?
I have no idea.
In terms of locations.
I have no idea. I know that there's 10,000 alone in Ohio. So you start looking at the just abundance, the plethora of mounds that go from you know, all the way up and by the Great Lakes, all the way down. And you kind of wonder, it's like, there's not enough people here to do this. And it's where are the, I get the whole crematoriums and what they would do and burn the dead. And I get all that. And
they did some of that, right?
And they did some of that. Absolutely. But there's just not enough people around here to do this. And when you start looking at, you mentioned Cahokia, the largest mound in America, and that probably has upwards of 500,000 tons of earth, which now we're looking at about 250 miles of dump trucks end to end stacked up, 250 miles of dump trucks. And you know, that's only one feature of Cahokia. I mean, when I was there and I talked to an archaeologist, the resident archaeologist that was there, and I always try to do this, try to hook up and just press against them to see what they know. And he told me, yeah, well, one of the things that we're still trying to figure out is how the heck could they level a 45-acre plaza within, let's say, 2 inches without a transit?
Yep.
How was that done? And that's one of the mysteries of Cahokia, which most people don't know. There's a 45-acre plaza, George, that's leveled within 2 inches. You'd be hard-pressed to do that today with bulldozers and everything else.
L.A., what are some of the myths surrounding some of the mounds? I'm hearing stories of giant skeletons being discovered and things like that. What's
well, there
happening?
Are. Absolutely, there are. And this is when this is just incredible because, again, in the historical records, you can go back and when we press archaeologists on this, they'll say, oh, well, the papers were just trying to sell papers. The newspapers were just trying to sell papers. Well, come on now, guys. I mean, all of these stories? These are stories, and people would find 8, 9, 10, 12 footers in some of these mounds. They would call the Smithsonian would come in, they'd gather them up, and they would never be seen again. Look, my work on Catalina Island, and you know this, I mean, I discovered something that was never supposed to happen. I was never supposed to find this photograph, but I did. I found it, and I published it, and I had three people analyze the photograph. Since then, Catalina, let me back up. Basically, we discovered a 9-footer in situ, a photograph, a little 5x7 black and white photograph showing Ralph Glidden and standing in a recently excavated tomb, and in front of him is a skeleton in situ. And we had three guys look at this picture and ascertain camera placement, where it was, the height of Ralph Glidden is 5'8". Lo and behold, it's a 9-footer. This is all in the book, I'm a Child of the Nephilim. And we show some of this in the Mound Builders films as well. We show that research because it's really important. When Richard Shaw and I went back to look at the museum and to kind of follow up on it 6 months after the book had been published, they had the photograph up on the wall, but they cropped the giant out of it. So we filmed there, and that went absolutely viral. That went viral all over the net. Since then, they have a new museum on Catalina, and they show the picture. They've blown it up, and the giant is still there, but they don't say anything about it. They don't say that you're looking at a 9-footer, and look at the anomaly of the skull. So all this is there. It's a matter of historical record. We've got.
Is there a cover-up here?
Photographs. I'm sorry, what?
Is there a cover-up going on?
Absolutely, there's a cover-up going on because it goes against the Darwinian paradigm. We are looking at. And look, Graham Hancock writes about this America before. The Vieira brothers talked about it on their show. Hugh Newman talks about it. I mean, in fact, Jim and Hugh come in Mathematical Mysteries of the Mound Builders. They weigh in. In the film, they're actually part of it, which is just fantastic. It was an honor to have them in the film. They have a slightly different paradigm than I do, but we all agree on something that they were giants here, George. I mean, they were here, and this is being obfuscated and held back from the American people.
Maybe that's why the mounds are so big, because they were made by giants.
That's what we think. We're looking at supernatural means that were employed here. We're not sure how it worked, but just like Sacsayhuaman in Peru, whoever did this took the tools with them. The advanced mathematics that we see in these mounds are just staggering. Advanced trigonometry. There's a math professor, of mathematics, Dorothy Isley, that comes on the record, and she's looking at the LIDAR maps of the octagon and the circle mound in Newark, Ohio. And she's looking at them, and she's going, you know, and she says this on camera, that if to do this, you need a computer, you need a drafting board, you need to draw it out. And if it's one thing, you know, it's a small octagon. George, I stood in that thing, And when you're there in the Octagon Mound, you have no idea what you're looking at. That's how big this thing is. You could fit the base of the Great Pyramid of Egypt inside the Octagon Mound in Newark, Ohio. That's how huge it is. It is just, and when you're there, you know you're looking at some kind of shape, but for the life of you, you don't know what it is. It's only when we flew a drone 800 feet up above the Octagon, that's when we discovered that, oh, my gosh, look at these sides, and they're perfect. They're absolutely perfect. And it's a complex octagon. So it becomes even more mysterious, because in order to do this, you got to check your work. Well, you can't check your work unless you're, you know, at least 100 feet up or a couple hundred feet up. So how is that possible in the ancient world?
What is,
you got the advanced trigonometry.
What does your gut tell you, L.A., in terms of what they were made for? Are they landing points? Are they marking points? What are they?
These are gateways. There's no doubt about it. In fact, in the new film, Secrets of the Supernatural, Voices from the Other Side, we drill into the Mayan elders coming up to the Serpent Mound and these other sites, and they do that because they know that they're gateways. Chief Joseph Irwin, again, makes a strong connection that these are gateways, and these gateways demanded human sacrifice. And we know that human sacrifice was practiced at some of these sites. We know that for a fact. They have found altars at the Great Circle Mound, the evidence of shamans, evidence of cremation, all this. We know that the Mayans did the same thing. The Inca did the same thing. Chichen Itza, again, the serpent. It's always the serpent. 50,000 people ritualistically slaughtered on altars. America Stonehenge, huge altar there. We know that, we believe anyway, that that altar was a sacrificial altar. There's a place for the blood to be collected. These are gateways. They are portals. They are gateways that allow these entities to interface with this reality. And that might sound strange, but that's the whole point of episode 3. And what we discovered there was just incredible. We actually had the Newark Paranormal Group with us. And I don't want to tip my hand. Well, that's a later show, you know, in the not too distant future, hopefully. But what they were uncovering, and I had no idea what these little gadgets were, but they were uncovering stuff. We actually had an encounters while we were there. But we talked to a pastor who was stationed in Newark, Ohio, and he talks about coming in to this home. And again, this is episode 3, getting way ahead of myself here. Coming into a home, and the table is levitating off the floor. George.
Jeez.
Yeah, he sees that.
How do you explain that?
All sorts of crazy stuff. Well, that's the whole idea. There's all sorts of crazy stuff going on with this. These are gateways. These are portals to allow these ancient ones in, the fallen angels.
To other dimensions, other universes?
Absolutely.
What do you think?
I think that they are, in my opinion, these are the return of the fallen angels. The First Nation people will call them the sky gods because they came from the sky. But these are the fallen angels, and they come with power, and they come with all sorts of the ability to manipulate space, time, matter, and energy. And eventually we're going to take this whole series on the trail of the Nephilim, and this is what we're going to be starting to allude to, that the same thing is happening in modernity, but it's slightly changed. And this is where we get into the whole UFO phenomenon.
Let's talk a little bit about that. But first, why is 18.5 lunar cycles so important here?
Well, this is what's interesting. These sites, many of them, America Stonehenge for one, and the Octagon Mound and the Great Circle Mound in Newark, Ohio, both are built on an 18.5-year lunar cycle. And what was interesting, the first time I went to America Stonehenge, which was several years ago, I walked in, and I'm meeting with Dennis Stone, and there's a little room where you go in and you watch this really well-produced film. And it tells you about the site that you're about to visit. And they talk about the 18.5-year lunar cycle. And I go rushing out of the room and go, Dennis, are you aware that the Newark Circle Mound and the Octagon Mound is also built on an 18.5-year cycle, as well as the Serpent Mound? He didn't know that at that time. And what this means, look, in order to do that for your listeners to understand, someone has to track the moon daily. They have to look at it and then somehow record it on something to be able to figure out what an 18.5-year lunar cycle really is. Because the moon waxes and wanes. It like travels up and down from our viewpoint. So now we got something that's really, really complex. How was this done? My gosh. Yeah, you could do it in modernity. We've got computers and crafting tables and all this stuff. I get it. But, you know, you go back a couple thousand years ago, or like America Stonehenge 4,000 years ago, how the heck was this done? Who's watching this thing for 18 and a half years, and why was it done? And then why create these sites like Stonehenge, England? Why not just, you know, put a few sticks in the ground and be done with it?
There have been,
you know,
go ahead.
No, I mean, with sticks in the ground, you can get exactly the same thing. No, they're dragging all these rocks around, and their precision is just remarkable. Same thing with America Stonehenge. They are absolutely precise. And what Dennis showed us there, he's never showed anybody else, and I won't tip my hand. That will come out a little bit later in the year because this series is episodic. But what we discovered there, George, Fritz Zimmerman was there with me, and Fritz and I looked at each other, and Fritz just said, oh, my gosh, the center of the world. And I'll just leave it at that, kind of whet everybody's appetite. It blew us absolutely out of the water. It blew our minds what Dennis showed us.
They have had some incredible UFO sightings in southern Illinois, specifically in January of 2000, where police officers even witnessed these things, all, you know, not too far from Cahokia. Kind of weird.
These sites, and this is why we're delving into it, and this is why eventually we'll be bringing in the whole UFO phenomenon, because these craft, lights, orbs, all sorts of stuff, angelic beings, light beings, are reported in and around these sightings. There's this one place which we visited, which is near the it's up by Lake Titicaca on the border of Peru and Bolivia, Amurumura, and we filmed there. And there's this like a doorway that's cut into the rock. When we were there, we talked to the docent, and I asked the docent through our interpreter. I said, you know, what is this? What is this doorway? How does this work? And he told me on camera that shamans come in, and they do ceremonies, prayers, rituals, whatever, and they open the doorway. And then later on, I asked him, this was in episode 3, I asked him, I said, look, what have you seen light beings come out? He said, yes. My parents saw light beings come out of the doorway. And you know, look, all sorts of stuff happens around these places. These are gateways, and the shamans know how to open them.
If you are an extraterrestrial, L.A., and you knew by spectrographic looking at our planet from afar that, you know, there's life there. We can tell. It emits the principles of life. We know there's life there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had the technology, would you come to this planet to explore?
Well, to your point, yes. I would definitely check it out.
I would too.
But, yeah, I would too. But I don't see, I believe, and I talked about this at the UFO conference up in Arkansas, and the one that you were at, I missed you by a couple of days, the one in Vegas.
Right.
Laughlin,
yeah.
And what kind of blows me away, I think that this whole thing is holographic. I really do.
Really?
I think we're in a holographic universe. And I have you know, ancient prophetic texts that point to that. Where, you know, Father God's going to roll this thing like a scroll. Well, is that allegory or is that literal? And I think it's literal. These entities pop in, they pop out. They manipulate space, time, matter, and energy. I don't think they're from another planet. I think they're interdimensional, and they come in, and they want to be worshipped. And this is why these sites were there. This is why they created these sites, and these entities come in. They are worshipped for a time. They set up shop. And then they disappear, and we're not sure why.
And they all leave. All of them.
All of them.
L.A., stay with us. We're going to take an hour of phone calls with you next when we come back. Let's talk about the mounds, folks, and also UFO questions that could tie into this.